Sam Cedar. Introducing whiny ass teeny baby conservatives to the truth. Wow, wow, conservatives. That's you crying. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
It is Tuesday, November 30th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the Dollar Lunch District of New York City. The only thing keeping this show afloat is the fact that our entire Sam Cedar juggernaut, the machine that puts this show out on a daily basis, can be fed for less than $3 a day. That's the only thing keeping us afloat right now, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, I should say, your generosity, and for those of you who have become members at the Majority Report at majority.fm, and of course, the guy who's sending us the computer, which is on its way. I mean, that's where we're at, folks. So any help you can give us will ensure that this show continues. On the program today, we'll be talking to Stephanie Mensimer. She is a journalist for Mother Jones. She'll be talking to us about the Tea Party. I'm going to revisit some of the WikiLeaks things. I got a very good email about it and did some more reading. I, of course, was on the Dilligan Radigan show yesterday talking about the WikiLeaks thing. I thought it was a pretty good segment. And we'll have that posted certainly within days. Certainly within days. At the beginning of the show yesterday, or just before Jane Hampshire came on, Barack Obama was giving a speech. Now, it's a little bit of an issue that Obama would start his speech right when I'm starting my program. They may not be aware that we actually go live at 11:30. I think the White House could be under the impression that we're simply a podcast.
I think they just download us.
Right. That's probably it. They simply download. They don't realize that we're live. A lot of people are saying, why do you continue to be live? Most of the people listen to it on podcast. I like doing a live show. B, I need the discipline, the schedule. Otherwise, we'd be putting this thing out at, like, you know, 11:30, and I think everybody in here would probably be too drunk by the end of the day to put it out. C, we're going to take phone calls shortly. I can't tell you it's going to be within the next week or two, but we are going to take phone calls, and we will get conservative callers. I can assure you of that. I can already tell by my email. And that's it. That's why we do it. So the White House took a little liberties yesterday. We'll give them a pass on that, but not so much on what Obama announced, which was a 2-year pay freeze for federal workers. This measure, this gesture by Obama is, I'm sorry, it's completely inexplicable to me. If you are a deficit hawk, if you actually think there's a problem with the deficit, I don't, not at this juncture. This is a completely empty gesture. It's going to have no impact on the deficit. I think there is, well, minimal. Minimal impact on the deficit. It will have 5 billion savings over the next 2 years. It will have a 28 billion savings over the next 5 years because it's basically slowing down the rate of increases. It's freezing for 2 years, and so it lowers base pay. But just for a frame of reference, the Pentagon's research and development budget for 2011 is $77 billion. I mean, we spend trillions, and the savings is incredibly minimal. As a gesture to the rest of the country, a message that what? We're willing to actually, in fact, I think it's possible, although I'm not clear on this, but I think there's an argument to be made that this may actually increase the deficit because it takes money directly out of the economy. Federal workers, I can tell you this right now, federal workers, on average, they're not taking a lot of their money and putting it into speculative businesses or speculative investments. They're putting the money right back into the economy. And at a time where their health insurance premiums are going to jump 7.2% on average next year, a federal transit subsidy will be cut in half starting in 3 or 4 weeks, December 31st. These people are basically taking a pay cut, and it's going to take at least $4 billion out of the economy. And who knows what the implication – I haven't seen calculations of that down the road, but you take that money out of the economy, and, of course, what you're doing is you're taking tax revenue out as well. So there's no meaningful deficit reduction here at all. But there is a meaningful drag on the economy in terms of economic activity. There is a meaningful, there's almost an offsetting reduction in revenue that would have come from the exponentially large economic activity that comes from paying people like this. And that's to say nothing about the politics of this. If you were going to negotiate with the Republicans because you wanted to attempt, if you genuinely wanted to attempt, to allow the Bush tax cuts to expire on those people making over $250,000 a year, this would have been a negotiating tool. It's not a negotiating tool anymore. By proactively and preemptively giving this away, what you're doing is you're basically telling the American public, hey, you know when those right-wingers talk about how evil federal workers are for having pensions, for making money? Now, you should know, statistically speaking, federal workers do not make any more than their counterparts in private industry. In general, they have a higher education level than the average worker, and so they get paid commensurate with that education level, just like they would in the private sector. The only arguable benefit they receive that most people do not receive anymore is good pensions as a function of them being unionized, which is increasingly rare in the private sector. And so we hear the right wingers. Grover Norquist said this at an event I did up in some comedy show, theoretically. Comedy show I did with Grover Norquist with Janine Garofalo months ago. And he was going, I mean, it was supposed to be light, and he just took the opportunity to demonize federal workers, to demonize all government workers. This has been going on for some time. Obama just capitulated to this, has both sent out the message that, A, yes, federal workers make too much money because we can afford to freeze their pay and essentially give them, in practice, a pay cut. B, the deficit is the most important thing that we must address right now as opposed to stimulating the economy and giving people jobs. And C, as a political tactic, he's simply shown that he's easily rolled and has just reset the playing field for the Republicans, and we're bound to see the implications of this when it comes to tax cuts for the extremely wealthy in this country. I think the kids have a word for this. It's fail. Right? Fail? Unless, of course, that's actually part of your agenda. Which it may be. Which it may be. That's that story. And this story, this is quite something. You know, the Tea Party is a reality in this country. Now, our upcoming guest is, I don't know if she's an expert on the Tea Party, but she seems to cover them quite a bit at Mother Jones. And we will talk to her about the details of this story and a couple other stories she's pursuing, but the Tea Party Nation president, this is according to D. Berghardt and L. Zeskind, I think of Tea Party Nation Watch or syndicated columnist. Tea Party Nation president, Judson Phillips. Now, there's so many of these Tea Party organizations, it's hard to keep track of them. And there seems to be multiple factions within the Tea Party. There seems to be the moral majoritarians, the Christian evangelicals, and the libertarians, and then some subset of both that seems to be convinced that, you know, everything's a one-world plot. I don't know where this guy falls on that spectrum, but I do think it is somewhere in the neighborhood of bad guess. Cuckoo and...
And you, sir, you're a pretender.
this guy... let's just play the sound here. This is a guy who is on a on the Tea Party Nation, network, right? They have their own radio station.
It's the internet radio feed.
Right. Funded by one of the Koch brothers, I'm sure. I wonder if I could sign up for that. Is that available to me?
Probably not.
Just bring up the fairness doctrine. They'll probably want to bring you on.
Right. Okay. Fine. Fair enough. Fair enough. I would like a little bit of that Koch brother money, if possible, folks. So here he is talking to, I don't know, some other Tea Party Nation nut. And, here it is.
Originally said they put...
All right, hold on. Let's play it again so we hear from the beginning. All right, good. Ready? Go ahead.
The founding fathers originally said they put certain restrictions on who got the right to vote. It wasn't you were just a citizen and you automatically got to vote. You know, some of their restrictions were, you know, you obviously would not think about today.
Okay, stop. Okay. So obviously, some of the restrictions that the founding fathers put on your ability to vote, you wouldn't even think about today. Now, anybody want to guess what those are? I mean, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm thinking he's going to say, like, you know, like, women. Women should have the right to vote, right? I think I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, maybe, I don't know, maybe he doesn't believe women should have the right to vote. Black people should probably have the right to vote. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's not talking about black people not having the right to vote. Maybe there should be some type of you need to be able to read. Now, that wasn't the founding fathers. At that point, they didn't need to keep out the blacks and the women. And so they didn't need to impose, you know, sort of like little tricky, hey, why don't... We've been holding black people as slaves for so many years, and nobody's taught them to read. That's a good way to keep them out. Now, what else could he be referring to? Let's go back. Can we go back just a little bit, and we'll play it from just a couple of seconds back? Let's go.
You obviously would not think about today, but one of them was you had to be a property owner.
Mm.
And that makes a lot of sense because if you're a property owner, you actually have a vested stake in the community. And if you're not a property owner, you know, I'm sorry, but property owners have a little bit more of a vested stake in the community than not property owners do.
Oh, the studio audience thought he was joking. Now here he is, like, you know, he said, "Well, so it's not an issue whether or not you have a vested stake in the community. I mean, do you hear that? Every one of you who is renting an apartment, who does not own a house or a building or an apartment, you people do not have a right to vote if the Tea Party gets their way. Because you don't have enough of a vested interest in the community. You don't care about the schools. You don't care about the safety. You don't care about whether your children can walk around. None of that. Because when this guy talks about community, he's not talking about those things. He is talking about money. Period. So at least we see that there's no daylight here between him and an average Republican. I can see how different the Tea Party is. I think Tea Party is simply another way of saying we're just crazy enough to say what we've always been thinking out loud. Tea Party is just a Republican with loose lips. And maybe a couple of the loose things. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is the Majority Report. Just a reminder, Majority Report brought to you by Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. I enjoyed a cup of justcoffee.coop this morning. That's why I feel so chipper. If you head over to justcoffee.coop, you put in the code Majority in the as a coupon code, and you will get a 10% discount. And I know that our guest, Stephanie Vensema from Mother Jones is probably right now on her computer going to get a cup of coffee at justcoffee.coop. Is that right, Stephanie?
Yes.
There you go. Stephanie, thank you for joining us. There's a couple of pieces that you had on motherjones.com that I want to ask you about. You seem to do a lot of reporting on the Tea Party.
And, I've spent like the last year and a half embedded with them.
Now, what has that been like, I mean, for you?
Well, it's funny. You know, I've actually got some friends now who are Tea Partiers. There's a guy here in Northern Virginia who actually took me to his gun range a couple months ago because he decided that I needed firearms training.
So for the oncoming meltdown to hunt, what do you need the firearms training for?
Well, he's trying to persuade me to take the class so I can get a concealed weapons permit.
Right.
Which I could only use in Virginia, but he thinks I would be safer that way.
Okay. Fair enough. but who is it? You know, this is the one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because there's a healthy dose of paranoia here. And actually, the story that you wrote that first caught my eye was about the Tea Party targeting sustainable development and this whole UN Agenda 21. Tell us about this story.
Well, there is it's funny. This actually came up during the election over the summer in Colorado. Dan Mays, who was running for the governor of Colorado at one point, criticized his Democratic opponent for a bike sharing program that he'd implemented as the mayor of Denver. And Mays said that the program was just a way of turning Colorado into a UN state. And people dismissed him. They thought he was just kind of crazy. But actually, he was kind of parroting this line that lots of people in the Tea Party movement have picked up on. And it's kind of an old conspiracy theory, but they believe that this UN was a document released in 1992 at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, where countries basically came up with a kind of a laundry list of things that they thought were the they should strive for in terms of sustainable development. It doesn't really; it's not enforced in any way.
So this is just a proposal.
Right, and the things that they, you know, pledged to try to achieve, but it nothing really came of it. I mean, it hasn't exactly been the most successful UN initiative, but the Tea Partiers have kind of been influenced by writing on this from some old-time, you know, New World Order types who think that the UN is the root of all evil and trying to create some kind of global governance system and take away American freedoms to govern themselves. And that has sort of seeped into the Tea Party movement. And so now that, especially now that the elections are over for the midterms, the Tea Partiers are kind of turning their focus towards local politics. And a lot of local politics involves land use planning and zoning and stuff like that. And a lot of it's being driven by their perception that these little local initiatives like a light rail project or a redevelopment of Route 1 in Maine are driven actually not by like local planning officials but some larger UN conspiracy to end private property.
Now, Stephanie, I understand that you have friends who are Tea Partiers, but can we agree that this is close to like a clinical definition of insanity? I mean, honestly, like I've been on Route 1 in Maine. It is heavily trafficked. It would be great to have less congestion. The idea that making Route 1 in Maine less congested is some part of a UN conspiracy, and what I've heard when people have brought this up to me is that it's a larger part of culling the herd to lessen the amount of human beings on the planet that is part of, I mean, we're just one step away from like the Bilderberger group here, right? I mean, this is where it leads to. There is a one world conspiracy run by people who, through the UN, their Agenda 21, are looking to promote the eugenics program from 100 years ago. And they're using vaccines and sustainable neighborhoods as their means of doing it.
There are some people that really believe that, and they do talk about the idea, you know, this lady I interviewed for my story works with Tea Partiers in Virginia, she said that really the goal of all this is population control. They want to move all the people into human habitation zones and free up the rest of the land for wilderness and wildlife preservation, because there's very much an anti-environmentalist component to it.
Yeah, this is really genuinely bizarre, and you know, I want to make it clear that there's a reason why we should be talking about this, because this makes up a significant cross section of the Tea Party, doesn't it?
You know, it's hard to know, because it's hard to know exactly how big the Tea Party is and you know, to quantify it, but I certainly found it in a lot of different places. You know, it was in Colorado, it's big in Florida, where they have a lot of fights over zoning and land use. You know, it was in Maine, and apparently in Texas, there's quite a bit of this stuff going on. So it's, I don't know if it's the majority, but there's definitely a strong strand of it in the movement.
There's a very strange cross section of people in the Tea Party, and you know, I was down at the Glenn Beck 828 rally, which was not exactly a Tea Party rally. But definitely a cross-section. How would you break it down? I mean, if you were to talk about, the three or four major strands of the Tea Party, ones that are not necessarily mutually exclusive, how would you break it down?
Well, it's funny you should mention the Beck rally, because one of the the divisions in the Tea Party movement is there are Tea Party groups, and then there are these other groups that are called 9/12 groups,
mm-hmm.
and they were inspired by Beck himself when he called on people to follow his, like, 9 principles and 12 something or other. But
right, the day after 9/11, too. It's
Yeah, when the country came together.
Right.
And so all these little groups sprung up kind of inspired by Beck, and they often are... lots of those people are also part of Tea Party groups, but the Tea Party people are not always part of the 9/12 groups.
Right.
And those people in the 9/12 groups I found are much more socially conservative.
And religious.
Yes. And in fact, it's funny, a lot of the people I meet in 9/12 groups are also Mormons. People don't talk about this, but the 9/12 leadership, kind of the people associated with Beck in that world, a lot of them are Mormons, so it has a different... kind of, it's not quite the same old evangelical coalition that you saw with, like, the Christian Coalition and Ralph Reed in the 90s, but that's definitely the more socially conservative wing, whereas the other part of the Tea Party is there's kind of, like, the gun people, the libertarians who,
right.
you know, they're sort of, you know, like the guy who took me to the gun range, he's actually, you know, he doesn't really believe in gay marriage, but he thinks that maybe we ought to recognize gay marriages across state lines, because if that happened, then the states would also be forced to recognize, like, his concealed carry permit, which, you know,
right.
he'd be able to
right.
use it in Maryland and not just in Virginia. And so they're a little more consistent on that stuff, and they don't care as much about the social issues.
Let me guess. Does he believe that this country has been socialist since essentially 1939?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure.
I think you'll find that of that ilk, my sense is that most of those people think that we've actually had more or less just socialist presidents since then. And now this third element of the Tea Party, this let's say where Glenn Beck and Alex Jones meet, this notion of a one world cabal, of eugenics, of population control, of FEMA concentration camps. This cuts across both of those two elements of the Tea Party, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I think it's a much smaller group, but, you know, the Internet has given them a much bigger platform, and also all the social media tools makes it easier for them to find each other.
Uh-huh.
So whereas these people might be kind of isolated crackpots, you know, 20 years ago, now they have... they're able to get a bigger following online.
Well, I mean, I would suggest that these guys are almost mainstream in the Republican Party, and the reason why I say that is you simply go to Drudge, who is trying to make himself relevant again, and you count how many times in the past month he has linked to Alex Jones, who used to be considered a very marginal figure who would be politically and, you know, damaging for you to be associated with, and I think you'll find that Drudge is linked to this guy literally a dozen times in the past month, and in some respects maybe this TSA thing, maybe it's other things that are starting to sort of meld these groups together. Now granted, Drudge is a little bit desperate for attention and looking for a new group, but it seems to me that this group is becoming mainstream in this movement.
Well, you know, it's really hard to say. I mean, they're certainly in there, and, you know, when they show up at rallies and Tea Party events, they've not been very aggressive at trying to, you know, push them out. So I think they feel like they have an accepted place there.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't actually meet that many people who really feel that way, especially on the libertarian side. I mean, a lot of the libertarian Tea Party types are a little bit more rational, and they do, you know, they know the birthers are crazy, and they, at the same time, you know, they don't want to alienate them that much because they are part of their groups.
Well, let me ask you this, and I would also suggest, you know, you got to ask directly, because my experience has been you don't find this out until, like, well into the relationship. I mean, I'm talking about, like, parents of my daughter's friends in kindergarten, who, you know, start off with, like, you know, politics, they're all the same, and then 4 weeks later he's telling me that UN vaccinations are planned to eliminate, you know, 2/3 of the world population, and I'm just sitting there going, like, oh my gosh, But so,
well, I wouldn't necessarily include the vaccine, because the vaccine people are kind of a different world. They don't. I wouldn't. Those people, you can find them on the left too. So they're not.
I agree.
I mean, lump them in the Tea Party group.
I think
you're more likely to find the people who think that Obama is secretly a Muslim. Those people are very prevalent in the Tea Party.
I've met a couple of those at the Beck rally. Now, so let's talk about what the implications are going to be politically, because you also had a story about that there's going to basically be, you're predicting, a civil war within the Tea Party. And I presume if there's a civil war in the Tea Party, it really is going to happen in the context of the Republican Party. Where do you see the battle lines being drawn in that?
Well, it's definitely over social issues, because you have the, you know, the old line Republican, you know, the foot soldiers of Republican Party are the old line evangelical Christian groups. And they've had kind of an uneasy relationship with the Tea Party, but they've tried to kind of work with them and get in on that whole thing. And if you look at the polling data, a lot of Tea Party people are very socially conservative in their views. So it's really a matter of priorities. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the Republicans do in January, what's on the top of their list. But if they start to bring up big issues like gay marriage and abortion, those are probably, you know, some of the big ones, then I think that the Tea Party coalition may fall apart a little bit, because one reason that they've had a broader appeal is because they've stuck to kind of three issues, you know, fiscal responsibility, limited government, and free markets. That's one of the slogans of one of the groups. And as long as they've stuck to those things, they've been able to stay fairly united. The other thing that's going to be a big fault line for these groups is immigration reform, because there are a lot of Tea Partiers who are upset about immigration, and they're not very friendly towards immigrants, and they are pretty rabid on this subject. And then there's other Tea Party groups that don't want to get into that fight because it's not, you know, on their three, you know, it doesn't deal with limited government, you know, reducing the deficit, that kind of stuff. And they think that that will actually be really divisive, especially because there are a lot of Republicans who actually support immigration reform along with the business community.
Mm-hmm.
So that could actually also be another big fight that will test the coalition of Tea Partiers.
All right. Well, Stephanie Mensmer from Mother Jones Magazine, thank you so much for joining us. You can check her out at motherjones.com. Interesting stuff. We'll keep an eye on it. We'd love to have you back as hopefully we start to see these fractures grow a little bit. It'll be a little more interesting. And if you get, believe me, ask these guys. I mean, I'm curious. Let me ask one more question. When they say that you should be armed for what's coming,
well, for everything. It's funny, I go to lunch with these people. Like, they have the Northern Virginia Tea Party meetings I go to at lunchtime sometimes, and pretty much everybody there is armed, even though, I mean, at least all the men are always armed, and everyone else there is like a woman over 60, and you couldn't find a more peaceful place. But then I realize that I'm sitting with these people, and they're all, you know, packing heat, so I don't know what they're waiting for. But
who are they waiting for? I mean, I'm really curious as to who, you know, what the coming onslaught looks like in reality. When they feel that they have to pull that gun from their holster and raise it up, who do they think is going to be on the other side of that? I don't know if they would articulate it at this point, but I have a sense that they have an image of that person in their mind. But we'll leave it there.
They, I mean, if you ask them, they'll often say that in case they're in 7-Eleven and it gets robbed. That's their standard stick. But they just like to be prepared. So, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question.
All right, Stephanie, thanks for joining us. We got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. We'll get into, well, apparently, those of you who want Social Security, you're greedy. We'll be right back after this.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black.
We're back. Don't forget, you can IM me during the post show, which is available live both on the Sammy Cam and via our audio stream. You know, I've been meaning to get to my review of the lottery. Maybe I should wait until Chris Rosen comes back on the show. But great piece by Diane Ravitch, a former Bush education official who's sort of seen the light on charter schools, in her words. And she actually reviewed Waiting for Superman, but it sounds like the identical movie. I mean, about as close as you can get. If I'm the makers of the lottery, I'm a little bummed, unless I get funding from the same people who did the other one. Either way. And I meant to read some of my emails that I'm getting from this crazy, and maybe it's wrong for me to call her crazy, but she's crazy, woman who I believe is in her 70s and really seems to be, you know, am I mistaken in saying it's a thin line between flirting and sending a hate mail?
that tells me a lot.
She literally quoted me the other day to prove her point. Are you ready for this? Larry the Cable Guy. And I think I wrote her back something to the effect of, like, your argument couldn't be less compelling if you had made it by spelling it out with farts. Now, I'm not quite sure, frankly, how you would actually go about doing that. But it just, the sheer ability to do that would be more compelling than trying to prove your point with Larry the Cable Guy. And then she's on and on about, you know, the oncoming meltdown. Like, was feeding Glenn Beck talking points so precisely that I could tell without, because I can't read what she writes to me because she doesn't believe in paragraphs. It's literally like just one long sentence that lasts. I have to scroll down, let me put it that way, on my computer.
It's a free market sentence, man.
Right, exactly. No government, no grammatical intervention. Not going to stand for that. So, Alan Simpson, you know who Alan Simpson is, right? This jackass. He is the co-chair of the so-called Deficit Debt Reduction Committee, or known as the Cat Food Commission, that could not, that was so messed up, so aware that they could not get their proposals through this 18-member commission. They need 14 members to present findings to Congress for a vote. That the chairman's Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles, Simpson, a longtime Republican foe of Social Security, Erskine Bowles, a longtime conservative Democrat foe of Social Security, using this debt reduction committee as essentially a cover to redistribute money from wealthy people, millionaires, who received their tax cuts from George Bush, redistribute money that was put into the Social Security Trust Fund by wage earners getting taxed on their first $100,000, if they make that much, putting it into the Social Security Trust Fund, and then this Deficit Reduction Committee being used as a front, essentially, to ensure that this money is not have to pay back to the Social Security Trust Fund, and redistributing the wealth upwards. And here's what Alan Simpson said the other day about Social Security. After saying that everyone who anticipates getting their Social Security checks because they have put money in through their entire working career, or their parents put money in, or their grandparents put money in to sustain this perhaps most successful government program in the history of this country. He said that we have the greatest generation, and I think this is the greediest generation. This wealthy man who was basically bequeathed his Senate seat, I would like to see one iota of sacrifice that this non-greedy man who has the audacity to refer to people who have paid into Social Security and expect it back as teat suckers, and now calling them greedy. These people shouldn't have been allowed to put out any memo about deficit reduction. Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Not anything to do with it. Nothing. It's fully self-funded. It can reduce the deficit in the same way that stealing money that is due other people and paying it towards paying off the deficit would reduce the deficit. But it's not creating the deficit. It's not responsible for the deficit. It's not increasing the deficit. Cutting it would only allow you to not have to account for the tax cuts that George Bush passed 8-9 years ago that blew a hole in our budget. Anything that comes out of this debt, so-called debt reduction committee, should be completely rejected just because these people have made it clear their only reason they're interested in this is as a front to cut Social Security. If people want to cut the military budget, good, they should. But it shouldn't happen through this debt reduction committee because it is a complete front to rob the vast majority of Americans. Complete front. God, I hate Alan Simpson. What a douchebag. What an amazing douchebag. Do I have anything that says you're a douchebag on that? Well, I guess this...
Only God, no other king.
That sort of implies it.
Let the mighty eagle soar. This country's far too young to die.
This is what I guess what Milo would say.
Poopy, poopy, poop.
That's what I say to you, sir. Poopy, poopy, poop. Don't make me add all over your face. God. Speaking of morons. Now, is he in prison right now, Stevens? No, right? His prosecution was thrown out because the Bush administration, U.S. Justice Department. Right? Was that what happened?
You're talking about Stevens?
Yeah. Senator Stevens.
He's dead, former. Isn't he?
Oh, did he die?
Didn't he die in the plane crash?
Oh, gosh. Sorry about that. But his quotes still live on. Let's play this.
I just the other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. Why? Because it got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. And here we have this one situation where enormous entities want to use the internet for their purpose to save money for doing what they're doing now. They use FedEx. They use the delivery services. They use the mail. They deliver in other ways, but they want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet. And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And if you don't understand, those tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line. It's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material.
He wasn't flying the plane. Not right for me to say. Look, I don't wish any physical harm on him. There may be some other people I want to reserve judgment for. But his tubes have come home to roost, as it were. Comcast has threatened a Netflix provider, I guess. Essentially, Netflix is a service, and then it has a content delivery provider. And apparently it's called Level 3. I think that's the equivalent of, like, back in the day at Air America, we had sometimes we had Voxel doing certain things. I think that's the equivalent. Essentially, it's a content provider, and Comcast has demanded a reoccurring fee from this Level 3. Now, it is true that Netflix uses an incredible amount of bandwidth across the globe, and so one might think, well, okay, then why shouldn't they pay for more? Although it's not exactly like a pipe, ladies and gentlemen. There is actually expansive qualities, and there's certainly an infrastructure to handle more traffic, and it could be easily expanded. And it's not such a finite commodity, this bandwidth. But more importantly, understand why Comcast is doing this. They're not paying any more money. Comcast, it's not costing Comcast anything else, as far as I can tell. What they're doing is they're trying to set the table, because Comcast is going to own NBC soon. And they're going to want to do their own delivery. They're going to want to compete with Netflix. In fact, I think they already do. They have something called Xfinity, which is a really bad name, but I guess they wanted to put that X in there to be reminiscent of Netflix. Maybe? I don't know. Is anybody a branding expert out there? Dorsey?
Not an expert, but sounds pretty good to me.
Right. Evan, are you a branding expert?
Yes.
Right. And so Comcast is promoting its vision of a combined television and internet on-demand service, and would love to be able to say, hey, we're going to cut into the profit or the budget of Netflix. I think Netflix just actually moved to a different pricing structure where you charge a little bit more for the DVDs and less for the online delivery. I think it's like only $7 now if you want exclusively online. And, of course, Comcast is like, oh, we can't have this. That's the price of two of our on-demand movies. But you could watch hundreds. And this is a vision of what the net neutrality fight is about. Because, you know, it'll start with this, but then it'll go to things like, hey, Comcast has just bought the New York Times. Huffington Post, you sure have a lot of traffic. We may have to charge you a little bit extra. Oh, Comcast has just bought, Catherine Harris and the Douche, the morning show or something. Morning Zoo with Catherine Harris and the Douche. And competes against Sam Cedar's streaming show. Sam, hey, sorry. We're going to have to charge you an extra fee, which you're going to have to pass on to your members. Your members who can become members at majority.fm. We got to get a button on that page. We need to get this going, folks. We need some help. I need to hear you people really getting geared up.
Charge.
Meanwhile, the FCC has delayed its meeting to decide on net neutrality from December 15th to December 21. That's not a good sign. Because, you know, lobbyists are going to be paying attention at December 21st. Guess who's not going to be paying attention at December 21st? All you folks out there running around to get your Christmas presents. I have a buy on that because I'm a Jew. And even though my wife's family is Christian, I get a buy. People understand why I'm not paying attention. I claim it's on religious grounds. It's really more on convenience grounds. So I just don't want to deal with that hassle.
It's up to you to save the internet, then.
Right. I'm going to be the one guy who's going to be paying attention to this. The FCC customarily releases a draft of its agenda 3 weeks before it's open. But had the FCC kept its original December 15th date, Chairman Julius Jenchowski would have needed to circulate its agenda by, I guess, a week ago Wednesday. So, I mean, theoretically, if it's going to be 3 weeks out, that's going to be coming in the next week. We shall see, folks. Keep your eyes open. Another story. This is really heartening. As you start to gear up for the Super Bowl, reported NBC Dallas affiliate, Katie Pettigo, director of New Friends, New Life, dedicated helping young, often abused women escape the sex trade, reports that we will have an influx of pimps and traffickers bringing women and children into North Texas for the Super Bowl game. They anticipate 15,000 prostitutes will be brought to North Texas for the Super Bowl. What? How many people could be going to that Super Bowl? 70,000? Doesn't that sound like a staggering amount? Like, who's...
Super Bowl's huge, man. People, like, that's their vacation for the year sometimes.
Like their family vacation? Like, we'll all go and we'll all get prostitutes.
Oh, I'm just saying the amount of people that are coming.
Right. Yeah, yeah, no, I understand that. I mean, I guess that is a family vacation. I mean, not a family vacation. I guess a vacation.
It just turns into a huge event where, you know, people who want to get prostitutes.
The horrible aspect of the story, because I frankly... The only problem I have with prostitution is that it should be legalized so that it would cut down on the exploitation, frankly. She's talking, there are 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 12-year-old girls that are victimized, degraded, and exploited every day. It's unclear how many she anticipates of those being brought into the city, but she believes that 10% of the out-of-town prostitutes, possibly 1,500 women, will be left behind to fend for themselves after the game is over and the fans are gone. I hope somebody looks into it, because if those numbers are accurate, it's astonishing and incredibly depressing. Enjoy the Super Bowl, folks. Isn't that also the number one day of domestic abuse, traditionally? That's what I've heard. Why don't you go back into the WikiLeaks, because I got a great, email from a listener. We could touch on the tax cuts a little bit later, but there's a new proposal being floated. $1 million or less keeps their tax cuts. Because, of course, the people making $250 to $1 million a year, man, it's so hard. So hard to get by on that these days. And, yes, look, I live in New York. I know that $250,000 isn't the same in New York as it is just about anywhere else. I know it's very hard to pay $30,000 a year for private school if you're only making $250,000. But guess what? Send your kid to public school. If that $4,000 in tax savings that you're going to make, or whatever it is. Because, you know, the first $250,000, even if you make $400,000, is taxed at the same rate, at the below the $250 rate. Yeah, I get it. It's difficult. It's much more difficult if you're not making $250,000. Frankly, I think all the tax cuts should expire. But if you can't make an argument that people making over $250,000 need to just do nothing, I mean, hopefully the House is going to vote on it this week. Just extend the tax cuts for the middle class only at first. We'll see what happens. Two stories caught my mind on that Netflix. Oh, and there's another story that I'm following. Supreme Court is going to weigh the constitutionality of an Arizona public finance campaign, campaign finance law, which could have serious implications. And maybe we should bring on a legal expert to really look at what these implications are. But it essentially is a law that if your opponent spends over a certain amount, we know this through disclosure requirements, then campaign, and you do not accept outside funding from corporations, you will get a certain amount of matching funds from the state. And it's a way to disincentivize people from getting money from outside sources, corporate sources that are destroying the democratic nature of our country. This is going to the Supreme Court. Good luck.
Surprise, surprise.
Here's some breaking news. Turns out the Supreme Court of the United States is full of corporate cronies and political hacks. So much so that even before they put on this latest round of right-wing corporate fanatics, they still gave an award and election to their partisan brethren. Brethren? More on that later. The WikiLeaks update. Phoenix. Don't be turned off by his or her email handle. Responds to either what I said on Radigan or on the show yesterday about the WikiLeaks. And says there are serious problems with saying, in effect, the government's past wrongs justify the release of secret documents. Now, I didn't say that they necessarily justify it. I said that I think there's a fairly clear cause and effect here. Phoenix goes on to say the government is not a single entity that can reasonably be called good or bad. And I would agree with that to a certain extent. It's the people of our nation, our citizens in its service, and foreigners who are cooperating with us that are going to pay the price for this disclosure. I would agree with that. He goes on to say that the government's wrongdoing and human rights are obviously morally wrong, but that doesn't then give people free rein to do whatever they want against it in retaliation. But they're not doing whatever they want against it in retaliation. I'm not justifying physical violence. And the fact that what the government did was obviously morally wrong, I would also argue that it was legally wrong. As you say, a violation of international and domestic law. Well, the problem is that the government is not responding to that obvious problem. That's the issue here. I don't think, and this guy's not even American, so, you know, he's operating under a completely different set of calculations here. I don't think that the government being in violation of domestic and international law and being morally wrong, which in my mind is actually almost less important, gives anybody license to do anything. And I don't know necessarily that it gives anybody license to do this, but it seems pretty close. There seems to be a breakdown in the process, the self-correcting process of our government. Because in the past, or at least in fable, the idea is that the wrongdoers will be electorally punished. This is a country of laws, not men, and the laws will catch up with them. And that clearly has not and will not happen. And it keeps happening over and over and over again. And in this instance, it wasn't simply just about breaking the law. It was also about the lies, about the fundamental undercutting of the government people's relationship. The notion that we know better than the American public, so we're going to lie and agree to lie that we know there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Maybe we need to go in there to create democracy. Maybe we need to go in there to secure oil reserves. Maybe we need to go in there to stabilize the region. Maybe we need to go in there, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. We're going to lie to the American public because we know better. Maybe we're Straussians and we believe this is what our responsibility is. We do not torture. I said it a couple of times. We do not, damn right.
torture him. Go ahead, torture. We do not torture, but yes, torture him. You know, George Bush comes out with a book. Buy my book. You could see how I had real cojones when they came and said, can we, you know, torture somebody? There's a real problem when there's no accountability for that. And like I said, not just no accountability, there was actually an active effort to prevent calls for accountability. Now, Phoenix goes on to make an argument that the shield law, it's going to be toast. Prior restraint is going to stop a clampdown on speech after this? No. He's going on and saying that the entire regime that has been built to protect whistleblowers, real whistleblowers, because I would also add that I don't think that the information that we got from this dump, this particular dump, rose to the level of the prior dumps. And I think there's a decent argument in a vacuum that this dump was not justified, because I don't know that it really points us to any serious wrongdoing that is worth the trade-off of some measure of secrecy that is important. But it's not just in a vacuum. There were other dumps. And there is an environment where I think it's important to say, like, you know, at one point, the government needs a check. And if they respond by making it harder for whistleblowers, by cracking down, by becoming more oppressive, more secret, I don't know that you can blame somebody for their antagonism. You know, I think the government still has responsibility for their actions. And Walter Shapiro in Politics Daily had a great piece where he quoted the late Senator Moynihan. In his final 2000 letter, he left in 2000, to his constituents in New York, he said, "As I close out near on to a half a century of government and politics, the great fear I have is the enveloping culture of government secrecy and the corresponding distrust of government that follows. Since the end of Cold War, which incidentally all those secret agencies quite missed, the secret side of government just keeps growing." There's a good argument that all that stuff that was in there that is shared by like 2 million people anyways shouldn't be secret. That the government should rejigger the way they do business, because it's wrong to assume this stuff can be kept secret anyways. I mean, in some respects, arguing against Julian Assange is like arguing against the telephone. It's here, folks. And it's going to be here. And this guy may be irresponsible, maybe not from his perspective of an international one, but maybe from an American perspective. What he's doing is irresponsible. But I don't know that his irresponsibility isn't surpassed by the irresponsibility of government officials who presently now could hold the sins of past administrations accountable and have refused to do so. That's a real problem. A greater problem than the fact that you know, somebody thinks that somebody's got bad breath, or that you know, Muammar Gaddafi hangs out with a you know, a big-breasted blonde. I mean, there's going to be implications and problems, you know, maybe for foreign countries on this. But the present regime of whistleblowing on the American government seems to not be working, because a guy can brag about torture in his book and still not be held accountable. Folks, stick around for the post show. You can IM me at Cedar MBS or Majority. I don't know why I say Cedar MBS. That's such an old one. Sam Cedar Show, you can IM me. Majority FM, you can email the show. Please, please, please become a member. We need you to become a member. We need you to. If you can't afford it, send me an email. We'll work out something. But if you can't afford it and you want this show to continue, we need you to become a member. All right, stick around. We'll take IMs after this. Have a great day.
As railhead towns feel the steel mills rust, water froze in the generation. Clear as winter ice, this is your paradise. There ain't no need for ya.
We're back. What's it, all Clash today? Is that what you did, Dave? Oh, really? Sorry, buddy. All right, so let's put that on the list for after the show. We got a lot of stuff to do today. Oh, my gosh, right? My appearance on Dylan Radigan is up on the Facebook page. If you have not liked, what are people supposed to do?
Like is good, but if you comment, it's better. You know, it gets a thread going. You know.
But can they become friends with our Facebook page, our Majority Report Facebook page?
Absolutely.
I'm bad at Facebook. I don't know if anybody picked up on that. And, like, you know, I got a ton of birthday wishes on my Sam Cedar Show Facebook page. Like a shocking amount that I didn't realize I had gotten. And I went through that. I'm like, Nikki, look at all these people who wish me happy birthday, and I don't. And so I posted on my wall, you know, thank you for all the birthday wishes. And I don't know if that's going to all those people, if it's going to people who didn't wish me happy birthday. I get somebody who wrote back, hey, no problem. And I got the sense that, like, they were being sarcastic. Like, hey, you really don't know how to use Facebook, do you? I mean, I couldn't quite figure it out. So, you know, if you're unhappy with the way that I'm responding to Facebook, you know, I'm sorry. Hey, incidentally, you know, and I meant to say this, we've got to get this down. We're up on Stitcher now. That's an app you can get at the iTunes store, and I think on your Droid, and you can listen to the podcast that way, right? Is that one way to do it?
Yep.
I got to look into it a little more, and I've been a little bit, you know, we're a little short-staffed here.
One more thing about Facebook. If you do want to check out our Facebook page, go to majority.fm, and over on the right-hand side, down a little lower, there's a box that has our Facebook followers who's liked us, and just click the link. It'll take you through, and you can become a fan. You can like us. You can watch our videos. All that good stuff.
Oh, I think you got to do a commercial for that, because you do that pretty well. G-Beard mistook the commercial on the Ustream video. Thought it looked a bit too well produced. He thought it was our show. Smitty, I'm not getting sound. I'm getting sound now. Neffer, good morning, Sammy. Have you seen the documentary Rest Repo by Sebastian Younger? No. Wow, interesting. She gives it two thumbs up about Afghanistan. Rest Repo, I'll keep my eyes open. Sven Gali, it's time to ask, why does the Tea Party hate small businesses who rent space? Does he honestly think every small business in a strip mall is owned by the business? Dirty renters. P.S. Don't forget the homeless who are obviously never going to get to vote Republican. Well, yeah, but it's not the homeless people who he's talking about. I mean, he's talking about people who rent. I mean, this is just absurd. Homeowners. I mean, seriously, property owners. I mean, honestly, like, what the these people are fucking crazy. When it comes to the pay freeze, the estimated savings is $50 billion over 10 years, which probably could have gotten on the level of cost for unemployment extensions. Obama didn't have to go far to find something to bargain over. In the age of Obama, bipartisan cooperation only involved one person, him. Yes. Well, you know, I mean, again, you know, at one point you just got to basically say, like, you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And for the life of me, I don't understand it. I think it's just like he buys into sort of these right-wing frames. And so when he makes a gesture
What he's really doing is trying to make a gesture towards a larger... I mean, who does he think that he's... What votes does he think he's getting? I mean, unless this is just step one of a larger plan that is going to be a consistent narrative of this. I mean, you know, I've read where some establishment types, let's call them, have said that this is just a shiny object. But, you know, when you have a shiny object, that's to misdirect somebody. You know, the implication is, hey, guys, look at this over here. Hey, oh, look up here. Look up here. And I'm walking away with your mouse right over here. It's like this. Hey, oh, I do that with my daughter when I want to pull something out of her ear and she's watching my hand reach for a quarter. I go, oh, look at my phone. And she's like, okay, all right, let me try and pull this out of your ear. But the point is that in this hand, he's not doing anything. If there's any 11-dimensional chess going on here, I think it's like, hey, look, it's a shiny object. No, it's not. What this shiny object is supposed to distract you from is the object itself. Look, it's just a shiny object. So don't pay any attention to the shiny object, even though this is actually the object. That's where I'm starting to head towards. I'm very close to that. Do you think there's any chance the anti-Wall Street, anti-rich economic populist part of Glenn Beck Tea Party message could lead to classically Marxist sit-down strikes, seizing the means of production, etc., from the right? I don't know. Doubt it. From Beck, this is just part of the us-them dynamic. Also, do you think Beck's focus on SDS, Van Jones, and One Nation working together could actually help rekindle a radical left? Well, the first part, I would say that Beck would never let them... These people are just, the thing is that they're spoon-fed their ideology. And when it becomes convenient, and it already has become convenient, to slowly turn that anti-corporate thing just more towards just like East Coast liberals or whatever it is, that's what they'll do. So I wouldn't hold my breath for any type of real populism coming out of that movement. I just don't think it's going to happen. I just don't think it's likely. And as far as rekindling a radical left, it's not going to come... I don't know. I don't think Beck... Why would Beck be the one that finally rekindled the radical left? I don't think so. Oh, where did that come from?
A box of things.
Oh, I just pulled it off another one. But I'll get it later. I'm fine for it now. No, so I don't think... No. Yes? No. Hyper Phil, happy birthday. Oh, thank you. No, Comcast users... the Comcast users that buy Netflix will use the bandwidth. That's right. That's a good point. Comcast already swallowed up Hulu. J. David Lahr, I find it disturbing when shows like Hardball focus on the so-called legality of the documents leaked on WikiLeaks when they should be focusing on the content uncovered. Journalists are now becoming advocates for the importance of government secrecy instead of doing their jobs, which is to report the truth no matter where it's found. Look, if you do two or three segments on it, I think it's a legitimate question. What are the legal implications of this? But it's fairly straightforward. He's not leaking these documents. WikiLeaks is the receiver of a leak, not the leaker. I mean, he's not. And, you know, that's the bottom line. I guess if you were chasing down who the leaker was and you wanted to compel WikiLeaks to testify, that may be another question. But
supposedly they already know who the guy was. This 23-year-old Manning, like an intelligence officer. But I agree with you. The content is important. In this instance, the content is, I don't think it's, there's nothing vastly revealing as far as the American public. I can tell you, it's going to piss off a lot of people in a lot of Arab countries that their leaders are so excited about attacking Iran. And it's also indicative of, you know, the Arab countries, these dictatorships, the way that they maintain their dictatorships is by villainizing America. And so any opportunity to get America to attack Iran, to attack any type of Muslims, it's a win-win for them. They get to diminish a regional player's strength, and they get to demonize the Americans for doing it. So when the right wing start going like, we got to attack Iran, man, Saudi Arabia wants us to. Daddy says, Zhang, actually, Comcast's Xfinity brand is applied to all their TV phone internet services. They compete with Netflix presently through a deal with Blockbuster. Those of us who are already members need others to become members. C'est vrai. We're going to set up, in the coming weeks, we're going to set up a whole mechanism for you guys to help. Dorsey forgot to talk to that woman who offered to be an intern. Right, Dorsey?
Yes, I did.
Don't be a puzzle. You know that Jim Clyburn's oldest daughter is an FCC commissioner? I'm sure it's just a coincidence, right? One day we'll look back and marvel that we could actually go to any website we wanted to by just typing in the URL. Suggested read on the subject of net neutrality, Yochi Blankler's The Wealth of Networks. It's available for free on his website. Thank you, Don't Be a Pup. Please email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com with that link or that thing. Death Rock, good show, Sam. I tried to explain to my economics professor this morning that the pay freeze was pointless after she said at least it's something. What good does that freeze do when Bush tax cuts for the wealthy will raise the deficit by $38 billion next year? It's a good point. She didn't agree. Even after 8 years of a tanking economy from these cuts, is she wearing blinders or what? You know, it's shocking that someone who teaches economics wouldn't know better than this. I haven't read any economist who has made the argument that curtailing spending right now is going to be helpful to the economy. I mean, there's just this sort of blind deficit hawkery. But you should ask her. Why is the deficit bad? Ask her. Why is the deficit bad? I got an emailer who's been emailing me from Japan who predicted this Irish bailout's not going to happen because politically there's no way that the cuts are going to take place, and it's certainly looking like he or she was prescient on that level. And she or he is anticipating massive devaluation of the euro and maybe a commensurate one with the dollar. And I guess that would strengthen the Asian currencies. I'm not sure exactly what happens at that point, but it seems to me if the euro gets worse, it's going to help maintain the value of the dollar. Because, I mean, the dollar has been, I think, maintaining itself for two reasons. One, because the Fed has been periodically inflating the value of Treasury bills. And also because there's nowhere else for people to go with their money. Although I will say this. A majority report mug has maintained its value and increased its value significantly in 5 years. 5 years ago, when we got these mugs, the idea
that people would pay for a membership to receive one of these mugs. Or I can tell you what has really increased in value is the mouse pads. I mean, it's unbelievable, the desire for these mouse pads, when just years ago, nobody was concerned. I would think that the value of these mouse pads have increased significantly more than gold. So you can buy your treasury, but whatever, you can do what you want with your money, folks. But you buy a Majority Report membership, and you get one of those mouse pads, and when it comes time to find out that you didn't have freeze-dried food in your basement and you need to get some, that mouse pad's going to come pretty handy when you need to go out into the open-air market to bargain. Every day I have to check the mouse pad collection. I put a little line on where they are because I know Dorsey and Evan are just like drooling to put those things on the black market. SPAYF, Sam, the holidays could be good for you. A Majority Report membership would be a great gift. Yes. We got to figure out how to do that. How is Obama going to get any union support now that he stabbed them in the back? Great point in pointing out how much federal employees' reduced spending is going to cost the economy. You know, I don't know. There are some people who speculate that could really hurt in Virginia. A lot of federal employees in Virginia. But they could also end up blaming the Republicans. Who knows? Who knows? Optimal Tomatoes. I used to think Obama is playing liberals to push forward a corporatist policies, but seeing how thoroughly the GOP played him on Don't Ask, Don't Tell has made me wonder if he really is just an astoundingly weak and trusting of his insider advisors. Also, good morning, Sam. Yeah, I know. It's an eternal question, isn't it? But I guess at the end of the day, if you're going to force him to do something, it doesn't really matter, you know, what the answer is to that question. Macintelligence, Obama goes to the World Championship of Target Shooting, turns in his guns at the door. Here's a leak of that doc that would make an incredible movie. Macintelligence, send me that link to majorityreporters@gmail.com, please. Kevin Semicolon, have you made any of those personalized Bush pardons yet? I promise to join next month, which I suppose is tomorrow. I have not, but we're actually recording we're going to have a new ad up probably within a day or two, right, Dorsey?
Yes. Absolutely.
Folks, see this theme that what's going on around here? Like Dorsey's to-do list is huge. Evan's, not so much. We're going to have to work on that, Evan.
I'll get to it.
You know what? I think you got to start doing maybe new openings or listen to the old openings with that pressure drop.
Do the old opening.
Yeah, because it's not just music and then the thing. There's whooshes, and it's time for you to make a little sound packages.
Can do.
Or find some type of phone system, for God's sakes. Let's get some callers in here. Obama federal pay freeze, says Pluger. Aside from surrendering a negotiating point, Obama's preemptive concessions also effectively validate false Republican talking points. Yes, I mentioned that. Example, tax cuts to stimulus, limiting offshore drilling, moratorium is way out of energy crisis, discard. Yes. Yes, my biggest complaint with Obama is that he has not laid any groundwork for any change in the future. Progressive change, anyways. Superfunk, when the CBO comes out and says that extending unemployment benefits is the most effective thing we can do in the short term, while extending tax cuts is the least effective, how are Republicans still able to press the issue? It's infuriating, and it's not just a matter of getting that information out there, because I've seen this reported. I don't know. Corporate influence. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know any of it. Todd Slater, how do I get my signed trucker hat? We're going to start sending this stuff out soon, as soon as Dorsey gets the membership list updated. Dorsey?
Dylan Radigan video what?
Sorry. See that, folks? We just got so much. We're overworked. We need to get another person here. We need an intern. That's what we need to do. Get an intern.
We need a coffee pot.
Yeah.
Oh, that is on my list to buy.
Awesome.
Right after I sell something. Like, I'm literally, like, going around the house, kind of like, oh, what can we get?
You could probably get some more paintings out of Myla, and we could get that stuff into some galleries in Chelsea. I think we could make some money off of that.
Child labor is the way to go with this venture.
Definitely. I'm a member already. We didn't get my mouse pad. Where is it? Unbelievable. I got an email from my sister, the other day. Like, no, this is, you know, where is it? I'm going to read this. This is, that's what that mouse pad I am looks like to me. Where is the, I got an email from my sister that is just, well, one was watching on the Sammy Cam, don't pick your nose. The other is, sorry to be a pain, but it's 2:52 your time. My sister lives in Italy. You ready for this? It's 2:52 your time, and the podcast is still not available for download. Excuse me? Excuse me? Are you serious? I'm getting shit from my sister because the podcast is not available for her to listen to during dinner time in Italy? As if, like, oh, you know what, guys, listen, I know we got this whole operation. We're servicing all these podcasts, thousands of people. Listen, we got to kick it up a notch. My sister needs it a little bit earlier because she's in a different time zone. Oh, okay. All right. And so we'll not do that whole thing where we play, you know, horseshoes before we put the podcast up or whatever it was. Unbelievable. Here's an idea. Go to the website if it's not updating on iTunes quick enough for you. God. Do you have any thoughts about the possibility Obama might get a successful primary challenge in 2012? He won't get a successful primary challenge. If he gets a primary challenge, it will be unsuccessful, and it will prevent him from winning re-election. I actually think, and this is my own version of 11-dimensional chess, but I actually believe that if Obama believes that Bloomberg is going to run in office, that's the best chance. That could be the best chance to, I mean, if Bloomberg really looks like he's going to run, I mean, is going to run, which I don't think he will, that would be the best chance for Obama to move to left. Because if Bloomberg's really in the race, where does Obama go? Jimmy Reefer Cake. Yeah, you can spend your money on ASCAP or whatever, but in addition, you should also be mining the internets for original new musicians such as myself. If I can provide any help towards your wealth and fame, it would make me proud. Well, Mr. Reefer Cake, feel free to send us some music, but, you know, ASCAP is going to be really cheap, relatively speaking, and there's just songs that I really have an emotional connection to, and it gets me going for the show. But I get no problem putting on, you know, listener music. We got to get our system down a little bit better.
People should tune into the Sammy.
That's going to be your job.
Okay.
So when you got to check the email addresses, because I know that you do not check, do you? You've never checked it.
They're supposed to get forwarded to my email.
No. Not the majority of reporters at Gmail.
Okay.
No. You got to get on there and check. Oh, that Beware the Green Dragon. I got to listen to that. I didn't even... Okay. That's it for today, folks. I have a coffee maker I'm not using. I'm going to take with me to Seattle. I'm not a coffee drinker. We'll send along. Oh! Look at that. Thank you. That's fantastic.
More than you know.
Dorsey needs it bad. He walks in here and it's honestly, I think, like,
three hours of sleep last night.
You get no sleep because he works nights and days. And you walk in here and you honestly, like the first 5 minutes, I'm like, did Dorsey have a stroke last night? Did he have a stroke? Is that why he's like, one of his eyes seems to be twitching? Thank you so much, Never.
Svengali, debt is bad because it accrues in larger and larger amounts on the interest on the debt. It takes up more and more of government spending. Yes, it's very inefficient in the long run. Debts are not bad to be held for a time, but long-term massive debt can destroy government funding because it sucks up more and more money by interest payments. Correct. There's nothing wrong with having a debt, though, since total lack of national debt means we can't issue treasury bills. Debt equals T-bills equals investment. You know countries have no debt, places like Turkmenistan, which get zero foreign investment. We could have Jamie Galbraith on to explain his theory that there's no problem even with long-term debt. I don't know if I subscribe to that, but I certainly do when it comes to short-term issues. If WikiLeaks is responsible for the leaks that makes Judith Miller liable for the Iraq war and plame. Correct. Exactly. Great analogy. I signed up. Where's my free swag? Thank you, Harold. We've got to wait. You did fine. Facebook, I'm realizing I should edit my AMs due to everyone making the same comment. What's this about Seattle?
What?
Future guest ideas, Maggie Mahar. Good idea. Put that down, please. Obama should try to split the difference. Bloomberg and Palin, you know how this... Yeah, he would have to move to the right of Bloomberg and Palin. That's a not a lot of opening there. What the opening needs is more cowbells. Yeah, Todd Slater. Natives are getting restless about the swag. It's been days. It's been days. The most it's possible that anybody has joined was 2 weeks ago. It's been days, folks. Check for reefer cake. And do not mess with the pressure job. I have an emotional attachment to the previous music. Yeah, I hear you. I think we're going to stick with pressure drop. All right, folks.
One last thing. I just want to give a thanks to Charleston Chu, who's been putting our videos up at Democratic Underground. We're the top big video story there today from yesterday's WikiLeaks U.S. Reaps What It Sows video.
Sweet! So,
thank you, and thanks to Kat Chu for correcting me. I thought, for some reason... Kat Chu and Charleston Chu were the same.
You idiot. Charleston Chu. Kat Chu. Totally different. Near Rose, another guest. All right, folks. See you tomorrow.